Hello, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and tonight we are getting very, very close to ending the book of Genesis. Going to be covering chapters 46 and 47. I told you guys last week there was a chance we might put both of them together, and we might take them separate. I hadn't really decided yet, and I've looked over it some more over the last week, and decided we could probably bite this chunk off at one time. Because again, like the last two chapters we had, there's kind of an ongoing story. We could piece it apart and maybe talk about in a little bit more in depth some of the cultural implications, the historical implications. We could even maybe get into and consider some of the spiritual aspects of it. But for the most part, Genesis chapter 46 and 47, we can really put together as a whole, because this is the story of now Joseph has reconciled with his brothers, and now his entire family comes to Egypt. And chapter 46 sets up the thought process of Joseph's father, Israel, or we better know him as Jacob. But before we get into that, give everybody a quick reminder. We're only going to be in the book of Genesis for probably, at the very most, 3 more weeks. I'm hoping that it'll be 2 with how I've been looking at the breakdown, but more than likely, at the latest, 3 more weeks. And then we will be going into a whole new study. We're completely changing the direction of what we're talking about and what we're looking at biblically on this podcast. And what we're going to be doing is I've invited my congregation to give their questions and their input and during their times of study at home, and I've invited you guys to do the same. And we're going to be looking at a lot of the hot questions, for lack of a better way of putting it, that people are having in this day and time as they are trying to reconcile culture and, well, what the Bible says about righteous living. So while we're doing that, we also are kind of hoping that changing this format around will get all of you much, much, much more prepared, better prepared, to learn how to study the Bible on your own. I kind of been taking a poll over the last 2 years. Once we'd started in Genesis, I didn't want to stop until we'd gotten it all done. But we've kind of been taking a poll over the last couple of years, talking to people that are members of the congregation that I pastor, and people that are members of other churches that I've either been visited before or preached or done revivals at, or that I knew of from times past before I came to where I currently am, people that my wife works with, kind of just generic pooling of anyone and everyone that we had the opportunity to talk about who would be open with us. And we learned that, yes, many people don't study the Bible, which is not of any surprise. What was interesting was that it wasn't necessarily a lack of desire, but rather a lack of know-how. And so the goal of this is that while you're doing your own personal Bible study, if you run into questions, you can go into the comment area that's here on the podcast, and you can sit, you know, say, hey, you know, I've got a couple of questions regarding whatever passage that is. I'll send you an email address and we can discuss it. I'll answer your questions, but then we'll answer that question as well on the podcast on one of the Mondays that we're doing it, depending on how the questions all fall in line. And that way, everybody else who probably has the exact same question that you do, that's maybe not taking the initiative or is too concerned to do, you know, to turn in the question, that question gets answered for them as well. And maybe that will start to help all that come into contact with this form of medium that we're using to become better students of the Bible. So keeping that in mind, I'm going to keep reminding you guys about it until we get it started, because then once we get it started, you'll kind of know the gist of the format at that point. But to kind of give a reminder so that if you do have any, We can kind of start getting some of those put together early on. And times that we do not have questions to answer, we're going to be going through a selection of what I consider to be some of the hardest biblical questions. Not necessarily because the answer is hard, but because the truth is a hard truth to swallow. So, keep all that in mind. If you have anything, we appreciate you sending over. Definitely looking forward to getting to talk to any of you that do take the time to do it. Now, getting into chapter 46, we left off, Joseph and his brothers have reconciled. Judah had given a very heartfelt confession, acknowledging the things that they had done wrong with their other brother, and not just acknowledging their sin and repenting of it, but also laying down their own life to make sure that what happened, what they had done before, did not happen again to their father. They were concerned about their father's well-being and about their brother's well-being, and were willing to give up their own life to guarantee that the other two would not suffer. And so Joseph drops the act. He forgives his brothers. They reconcile, and he sends them back with all the things that they will need to move the family to Egypt. Now, here's where things kind of get interesting, because we have a couple of problems that we tend to not realize are problems. First of all, in our mind, well, Joseph is a ruler in Egypt. He's the second to Pharaoh. You know, this isn't a big deal for his family to be brought down, but there's a couple of big issues that are going on here. Number one being that Jacob has been told by God all his life to never leave the promised land, the promise that was given to Israel, to Abraham, to Isaac, was if you do as you're told, you abide in the land that I have set aside for you, then I will bless you. But if you try to go and do your own thing, then I will curse you. So that's the first problem that we have, is that even though it seems like it's a very obvious thing for them to go to Egypt, we must understand that we have to make sure we are clear about the will of God before we do something. Just because it looks like the obvious thing doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right thing to do. So that's the first problem that we see. The second problem that we see is just because Joseph is in the position that he's in, there's not a guarantee that his family will actually be welcome in Egypt. One of the things that you should have noticed in the last couple of chapters that we've done is that even though Joseph is second in command in Egypt, it's specifically talked about that at the feast he holds for his brothers, that the Egyptians sit away from him. And that's because he's in Hebrew. One of the things about the Egyptian culture for that day and time is that they were extraordinarily discriminatory towards anybody that was not an Egyptian. So even though Joseph had the position that he had, even though Joseph had done the things that he had done, a lot of your common Egyptian people did not want anything to do with him, and were more than likely not happy at all that they obeyed the words of a Hebrew man. And so for Joseph to be there, Pharaoh can kind of argue his point that, you know, he's Pharaoh and he put him in that position, and if you don't like it, tough luck. But now Joseph is bringing in 70 of his family members, and not only are they not Egyptian, but they are also shepherds, and shepherds were considered to be an unclean, filthy abomination amongst the Egyptians. Like they were much more cruel towards that type of work than even the Israelites of Christ's time were. And so you got problem number two of just because he's in this position does not necessarily mean that they will all be welcome in the land. And then the final issue that comes to mind in this situation is how well will this actually work out for God's people? Because by this point, God had told Abraham and he had told Isaac and he had told Jacob in the promise that there was going to be a time where they would be enslaved for 400 years. So, even though they're going back home and they have all this good news to share with Jacob, there's going to be a lot of reasons for Jacob to be skeptical about whether or not this is the right thing to do. Firstly, because it looks like it goes against the word of God. Secondly, because logically, it doesn't seem like a good idea. And finally, because if this is the part of the promise God had talked about, Jacob is leading his family into what is going to be the beginning of a very, very difficult 400 years. And so, with all of that in mind, the point of these two chapters, the application that we're going to dig into for your individual life is how to trust God when everything seems like it's wrong. There's not going to be many times in your life that trusting God is going to be an easy thing to do. In fact, most of the time, it is not going to be an easy thing to do at all. In fact, 6 years ago, when I was going to become the pastor of the church that I'm the pastor of now, I was highly skeptical of all of it. I said no many times. I told them many times, I'm willing to help out. I'm willing to, fill in for you from time to time. I have no interest in anything beyond that whatsoever. I just met my wife at the time. We had just gotten engaged. We got married halfway through the time that I was filling in out here. And there was a lot of time that to me it did not make any sense. I had no idea where Forest City was. I knew nothing about Forest City. Forest City did not exist in my life until that moment. I had a newlywed wife. We were trying to sort things out and jobs and life and putting everything together. There was a lot about it that did not seem like it was a smart thing to do. And there were some definite bumps in the road, and it was not always easy and has not always been easy in that time. However, looking back at that moment, I can tell it was the right decision. Didn't look like it, didn't logically look like it, didn't in any way, shape, or form seem like it was a good idea. But here we are now, and I can agree that, yeah, we made the right decision, despite the fact that things didn't look clear. So look at Jacob's struggles, starting out there in verse 1 of chapter 46. It says, "And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba, and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac." So right off the bat, there's something to notice about this verse. When Joseph sent back for his family, Pharaoh told him, tell them to just leave everything, get in the wagons, and come down here, and we'll give them everything that they want. But what is it that Jacob does, or Israel, as they're calling him here? He gathers everything that he has, takes it with him, comes to the southern border of the promised land, Beersheba, and which is a very famous place because Abraham made sacrifices there, Isaac made sacrifices there before God. There were a lot of quote-unquote come-to-Jesus meetings that happen at Beersheba. And so he stops at Beersheba, and he offers sacrifices to God. And now any time that you see that in the Old Testament, people kind of, especially in our day and time, take this as almost a ritualistic kind of thing. It's like if you were to stop by the church and talk to your pastor, okay? That's kind of how we act about it. But what's really being implied here is that Jacob takes everything because Jacob really, really is uneasy about this situation. This doesn't seem like a wise thing to do. So he takes everything, just in case, and I totally understand it. That's one of the things me and Jacob have in common. I'm very skeptical of everybody. And so he takes everything with him. And then when he gets right to the border of the Promised Land, where his fathers before him had built an altar, he stops and he starts to worship God. And the idea that of him offering sacrifices is that he is waiting for God to make it clear to him that he's supposed to go any further. Now, to us, we might look at that and be like, oh, so Jacob was just scared of change. No, that's not what this is. Because you need to think about this. His son, that he has believed has been dead for 20 years, is now the second in command in Egypt. Yet even his love and his desire to see his child does not outweigh his fear of doing the wrong thing. One of the most important lessons that you can ever learn in life about trusting God is that when you trust God, it must be because you have waited on God to make it clear to you what it is that you need to do. Jacob could have easily justified just running straight to Egypt. His son, who he thought was dead for 20 years, is in Egypt. All the food and the things that they need are in Egypt. Everything about going to Egypt from a beginning look, a secular look, seems like a wise decision. But he remembers what God promised to him, which is that if you go outside of the promised land, I will not take care of you the way that I am taking care of you in the promised land. And so he stops to worship God. And this is the beautiful thing about God, is that if you stop and you ask God to show him his will, he's not ever going to deny you that, because look at what happens. It says, God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. And I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. And Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him into Egypt. Jacob stops and says, okay, I know this seems like the right thing to do, but I know that the commandment of God was this. And so I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to worship God, and I'm going to pray, and I'm going to wait on God to tell me what to do. And God comes to Jacob and tells him what? It's all good. This is part of the promise. Yes, I told Abraham and I told Isaac to not go down into Egypt, but that part of the promise that I made that your people would grow large and exceeding, that is going to have to happen down there in Egypt. Go down there. I promised Jacob, you will not be down there forever. You'll return again to what is your rightful home. And so Jacob gets up. He's heard from God. He fully trusts God. He travels to Egypt. And he takes his entire family, all 70 of them. In fact, in the next verses, it goes over all of the lineage of Jacob. And we're not gonna read and go through all of that. The only reason for that being, number one, that it's going to take 20 minutes to go through that part. But number two, because we're not going to go into the significance of his bloodlines today. That will come into practice as we're going through all those questions later on as we're studying the Bible together. But so, all in all, he brings all 70 of these family members down into Egypt with him. He shows an exceeding amount of trust in God. He's done the right thing. It's looked like it was a spiritually wrong thing to do. He has made sure to pray and to consult with God and to worship God. The equivalent of that for our day and time is that you pray about your situation. You study your Bible. You seek the guidance of your pastor or a deacon or somebody of trust in the church that is wise about the things of God. He's done all those things, realizes this is the right thing to do, that this is what God wants him to do. He gets his whole family up and moves all 70 of them into Egypt. Now, that does not deal with, though, the logical issue, right? We have the spiritual one. God said, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. But now Jacob also has to overcome the secular concerns, which are that the Egyptian people do not like the Israelites. They don't like Hebrews. They don't like really anybody who's not an Egyptian. And they certainly hate someone who works with animals. That's a filthy, dirty, nasty job, and it's beneath them in their mind. And so if you look down at verse 28, that's where our lineage stops and the story begins again. It says, "And he sent Judah before him unto Joseph to direct his face unto Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen." So this is the part that I'm talking about when I say that we had a spiritual issue and then we have a secular issue. As they're going down there, Jacob is not unwise about the world. He understands that if he marches his entire family of 70 people all the way down through Lower Egypt and into Upper Egypt, and remember, I know we had this conversation almost 2 years ago when we started going through Genesis together, but remember that because the Nile River actually flows backwards from what you would expect, Lower Egypt is up on the northern end of the continent of Africa, Lower Egypt is on the northern end of the continent of Africa, and on the southern end down towards the tip of Africa is what is referred to as Upper Egypt. Places like Cairo and these kinds of areas exist, okay? He knows that if he brings these people, his family, who are Hebrews, who are shepherds, who have a lot of animals, down through the Canaan land bridge there, where Israel and Arabia and all, you know, Iran, Iraq, these areas are at, that when he comes into the land of Egypt, they are immediately going to have problems because he's going to cross the Nile, be in the middle of what is normal Egyptian territory, and they already don't like them for their culture, and they really don't like them for what they do for a living. And so he sends Judah ahead of him to go to Joseph. And while he's going to Joseph, he turns in the direction of what's known as the land of Goshen, which is kind of, it's not technically directly east of Lower Egypt. Kind of, it might be a little bit northeast. It's a very small hairline margin of availability, but it's on the other side of the Nile River, okay? Over on the eastern side of that African continent. He comes into what is basically the Egyptian Empire, because when it says he goes down into Egypt, he's in Egypt pretty much the moment he steps out of Canaan because of how far their empire stretched. He sends Judah to go down into the areas where Joseph would be, which would be more in the lower, upper, civilized part of Egypt, obviously, where Pharaoh is abiding, to go and tell Joseph that they were coming. And while he's telling Joseph that, he just immediately heads to the patch of land that was mentioned to him as being where they would be allowed to live, because there's basically no one in Goshen. It's all fields, pretty decent shepherd lands, flock lands, cattle lands, these kinds of things. There's not a lot of farming. There's not really any civilizations, just a couple of small villages in the area. And so Pharaoh says, you know, we can put them up in Goshen. Goshen would be a perfect place for all their animals. And whether Pharaoh maybe wanted to admit it or not, they kind of liked it that way because then the Egyptians are separate from the Hebrews, for lack of a better way of putting it. We didn't want a segregated Egypt. And so Jacob, he doesn't completely trust the situation. He trusts that it's going to work out the way that it's supposed to work out. He trusts that he's doing the right thing because God has come and talked to him. He's done his work to make sure that he is still serving God. But he also knows that logically, this is not a good idea. And so it's probably better that we proceed with caution. And he sends Judah ahead. And the moment that Judah gets there, it says Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen, and presented himself unto him, and he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive. And Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and shew Pharaoh, and say unto him, my brethren and my father's house, which were in the land of Canaan, are come unto me. And the men are shepherds, for their trade hath been to feed cattle. And they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come to pass, when Pharaoh shall call you, and shall say, what is your occupation? That ye shall say, thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth even until now, both we and also our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So Joseph comes up to the land of Goshen. He's reunited with Jacob, his father. They have their moment of catching up and crying, these kinds of things. And then Joseph says, I'm going to go. I'm going to take you with me. I'm going to introduce you to Pharaoh. And when I introduce you to Pharaoh, I'm going to say who you are and that you are shepherds by trade and that you feed cattle and that you've brought your flocks and your herds and all these things with you. Now, I know that the reason Joseph is saying this is because Joseph's already figured out that Jacob did not come down all the way into Egypt. He went straight to the land of Goshen. He's like, you know, it's better that we just don't stir the pot at all. Let's not upset all of the local folks. Let's just slide on over here into this little patch of land they said we could have anyway. And we'll just sit here and be real, real quiet-like and behave ourselves and kind of ride this out. But Joseph is insisting. He's, no, we're going to go down. You're going to meet Pharaoh. And we're going to tell Pharaoh what it is that you do. Because Pharaoh's not going to throw you out of the nation, but instead, he will more than likely end up giving you the land of Goshen. Because the Egyptians don't like shepherds at all. They don't like anyone who is not an Egyptian. And this way, Israel can grow as a separate nation from Egypt while living in Egypt. This is a very fantastic thing that God does here. Because God knows that if he moves his people intertwined with another nation, they immediately fall into heavy idolatry. But this particular nation is not a nation that wants to intermingle with anybody. So they are content to let the Hebrews stay on the other side of the river, far away from them, worshiping God the way they're supposed to, and staying out of their business because they're all nasty, filthy shepherds. In short, spiritually, to Jacob, it looked like a really bad idea. But He consults with God, he prays, and God says, no, this is what I want you to do. Secularly, for Jacob, this does not look like a very good idea. But in fact, the very thing about this whole trip that's a problem for Jacob is what is actually the best part. The Egyptians' dislike and hatred for them as a culture and for them with what they do as an occupation allows for them to become a thriving nation that starts with 70 people and ends with over 2 million by the time they come out of Egypt in the time period of the Exodus with Moses. See, we don't have to just trust God when things spiritually look a little cloudy. But we also have to trust God when logically it seems like a very bad idea. Because what you and I think might be a bad idea might actually be the best part of the idea completely. Here, God already knew that the goal was for his people to be able to be protected and to grow while not being tainted by the place that they were growing in. And so it's the perfect win for all of them. Now, many times you and I go through life, and even after God has made it spiritually clear, it's okay to do it. And even after God has made it secularly clear that even though you might think it's a bad idea, it's actually not a bad idea, we still tend to have some trouble trusting God still, don't we? There's lots of times that we can be shown backwards, frontwards, forwards, upwards, downwards, sideways, reverse, that something is actually the right thing to do despite our own personal thoughts. And we will still walk away from it because we don't like the fact that it doesn't seem like it's the right idea to us personally. Even though it might be an obvious thing, even though it might be something that we can tell and agree all day long, that spiritually and secularly, even though it might be rough or hard, it's the right thing to do, we still will argue and fight and fuss and feud and goad and all these things. And I know that because I've done that in my own life, and I know that you've done that in your life. There's been plenty of times you might have had a problem in your life, gone to somebody and said, you know, I'm having this problem. And they'll go, oh, well, I know that, but, you know, this would be a difficult thing for you to do, but it seems like doing this and this is the right idea. And you go, yeah, you know, I mean, I agree with you, but, which is the famous word of self-destruction. That word all too often leads to people making some of the worst decisions in their life. And what is it that's driving that decision? Because if we're not trusting God, then we're actually making our decisions from a place of fear. I want you to understand that if there's anything you take away from tonight, and you don't get trusting in God, then let it be, don't make your decisions in fear. Yes, change is not easy. Doing the right thing is not easy. Especially doing the right thing when you are not sure that it's 100% the right thing is not easy. Doing the right thing when even if you feel like it's the right thing to do, but it's going to be extremely difficult, is not an easy thing to do. But I want you to understand that if you make that decision from a place of fear, as opposed to a place of understanding it might be difficult, but God knows best, that decision made in fear will be far worse than going through hard times while serving God. What would happen to Jacob and his family if they'd have said, nope, not going to Egypt, I'm going back up to my house? Well, there's a famine in the land. There's a very good chance that they might have offended Pharaoh with that decision. And he'd say, nope, your family can't buy from us anymore. And then they die in the famine. And all their wealth and their herds die in the famine. And there's a very good likely chance that if they had stayed in Canaan, they may have ended up having to become a part of a different group of people to survive, which may have led to idolatry in the nation before the nation could even begin. There's a lot of things that could have gone wrong not coming to Egypt. But there's a many, many opportunities for things to go right by coming to Egypt. Here, Jacob didn't just have to overcome trusting in God spiritually, but trusting in God secularly, but he had to follow through with it. Look at what happens in chapter 47. It says, "Then Joseph came and told Pharaoh, and said, 'My father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen.' And he took some of his brethren, even 5 men, and presented them unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, 'What is your occupation?' And they said unto Pharaoh, 'Thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers.' And they said moreover unto Pharaoh, 'For to sojourn in the land are we come. For thy servants have no pastures for their flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. And now therefore we pray thee, let thy servants dwell in the land of Goshen.' And Pharaoh spake unto Joseph, saying, 'Thy father and thy brethren are come unto thee. The land of Egypt is before thee. In the best of the land make thy father and brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen let them dwell. And if thou knowest any men of activity among them, then make them rulers over my cattle.'" Here we are. We go before Pharaoh. Very intimidating, very scary thing, I'm sure, for all of them to do. They've got to trust in God and follow through that this is going to go the way God said it was going to go. They come before Pharaoh, and they go right by the script, don't they? Joseph comes in, he goes, "This is my family, this is my father, they're shepherds by trade," and he has this conversation in private with Pharaoh. More than likely, his family and his brothers are back towards the back of the throne room. Joseph goes forward, and he has this discussion inaudibly for them with Pharaoh. Pharaoh calls his family to approach, and as they approach, he looks at them, and he double checks the story, essentially. He says, "What's your occupation? What do you do?" And they, "Well, we're shepherds, and just to be blunt and honest with you, we don't have any pastures for our herds. Our desire is to come and to live amongst all of you, and we'd like to do that in the land of Goshen." Now, that's a really big ask. I think about this for a moment. If you are going to church, right? Okay, you go to church for many, many years, and you're around all the people in that church, and you start to get to know them, and you know their names, and you know their occupations, maybe you know things about their kids, their families, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You kind of know them, right? Sometimes you know more some people in your church better than others, but you kind of have a broad understanding, right? Well, let's say that, you know, maybe some that you only know by name, you know, they don't talk too much, or maybe they don't always come as much, whatever. Let's say they run into a problem, and they need to be able to stay with somebody at their house, okay? And you say, "You know, I don't really know brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so very well, but I'm going to open my home to them. I'm going to show them Christian hospitality and love and kindness, and who knows, maybe I'll get to know them better." Right? And so you open your house up to them. And they come that first night to your home. And they go, "Man, you know, you got a really nice place here. I think we'll just stay here for a while if you don't mind. Now look, you've been going to church with these people for years. You love them. They're your brother, your sister in Christ, whatever example you want to run through your brain for this. How many of you want them to come and live with you forever?" You don't, do you? You don't. Let's be honest. And if you're on the other end going, "Oh, yes, I would. I'd be fine with them living with me forever." You are lying. You're lying, and you're lying, you're lying. And you and the Lord are going to have a conversation about that. No, you wouldn't. even for your dearest and most close friend, if they came in on the first night and said, you know what, I appreciate you so much, I think I'm going to move in here and I'm just going to stay here. That is not something you'd be okay with, not at all. You might for, I don't know, the first 15 minutes be like, oh, that's such a great idea. But at the end of the day, you give it a week, you're going to be ready for them to get out of your house. That's essentially what they're asking. He knows Joseph, but he really doesn't know these guys. He doesn't know them all that well. He knows of them. And what he knows of them is, you know, it's a little bit, not a lot. And they essentially say, you know, we don't have any food, we don't have a home, and we sure would like to just move in and take a couple bedrooms in your house and stay there and take some of your land to feed our cattle, if you don't mind, sir. That's essentially what's going on here. Now, obviously, they're being more respectful than I'm being flippant. I'm just giving it to you in plain Arkansan. But at the end of the day, that's what they're asking. Now, I don't know about you guys, but if I even, there'd never be a time in my life that I would think that would be the argument to win with. If I was going to try to move into somebody's house full time, I'd be talking about all the wonderful things that I could provide for that person if I was there with them. Like, I'd be trying to offset their desire to not have me in their home. And that does not happen here at all. They tell Pharaoh, we are Hebrews, we are shepherds, which you guys hate, and we sure would like some of your house. Doesn't seem like a good idea, does it? No. Seems like a horrible idea. Seems like an idea that Pharaoh would look at them and say, you have lost your ever-loving mind. Joseph, get your freeloading family out of my throne room. But instead, Pharaoh turns to Joseph and says, thy father and thy brethren are come unto thee. The land of Egypt is before thee. He looks at Joseph, shocked. That's what's going on here. He does not understand at all what's occurring, other than that he's meeting their family. The fact that Joseph's been, you know, this is dad, this is my brothers, and they sure would like some room somewhere to stay, and they've come up and been like, well, this is what we do, but we promise we'll live out in the land of Goshen, which was not a desired area by the Egyptians. They didn't care about it any. It's kind of like if you'd asked to live in my garage. You know, it's not really the most desirable place in the world to be living in. But they're asking these questions, and Pharaoh looks at Joseph and he goes, your family is here. All of the land of Egypt is before you, and the best of the land make thy father and brethren to dwell. Is what? Why are you talking to me about this? They're your family, right? Yeah, okay. You're second in command, right? Okay. Put them wherever you want to put them. You can give them of the very best, or if they want Goshen, they're more than welcome to have Goshen. That's perfectly fine. This is not at all how this discussion would go 99% of the time. If you tried to do this at any point in your life, 99% of the time, this is not going to get you anywhere. This is not going to be a very good idea. In fact, it might get you thrown out of somebody's house. But Pharaoh looks at Joseph and he goes, they're your family. You're second in command. Put them wherever you want to put them. You can give them of the very best of the land. But if they want to dwell in Goshen, then they can dwell in Goshen. And in fact, I'll raise you one better than that. If some of these guys in this group are smart enough to be able to manage large groups of herds, you put them over my cattle and let them raise mine too. Pharaoh just said, it's a complete shell shock. Even Joseph doesn't expect this, guys. Joseph is literally practicing them up before they get in there. Now, I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to say this, and then you're going to say this, and then I'm going to say this, and you're going to say this, and we're going to hope to God this works. That's basically what Joseph is doing. And Pharaoh looks at him and goes, I don't even know why we're having this conversation. I put you in charge of Egypt. Do what you see is best. And then it says that Joseph brought in Jacob his father. and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. So this meeting is already miraculous, okay? There is no reason in the world that this sales pitch should have worked to get them into the land of Goshen. Not at all. It's not a very good sales pitch at all to justify moving in people that nobody's going to be very proud, going to like having there. This is not at all the best sales pitch to get the land. Nothing about this made sense for it to go the way that it has. Other than that, they trusted in God, and God held up his end of the bargain. But then Joseph brings in his father, because this is a great blessing Pharaoh has given. Therefore, the oldest member of the family would be the one to acknowledge what has been given. But Jacob does something extraordinary. It says that he blesses Pharaoh. Now, what makes this extraordinary is two things. Number one, it shows that Jacob is genuinely grateful for the blessing that Pharaoh has given them, which is not something that is necessarily in the repertoire for Jacob. Jacob tends to be a very arrogant, very manipulative, very tricky individual. He doesn't get things through humility and kindness and trusting in God. He gets them through doing all the wrong things. That's how his approach normally is. So it's an interesting miracle that he blesses Pharaoh. He just immediately goes into doing this. But also that Pharaoh receives the blessing. Pharaoh is considered to be a god in Egypt. It's a very strange thing for a common man to bless a god. But Pharaoh allows him to do it because Pharaoh sees that something is different about Jacob. Look at what he says. It says, "And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, How old art thou?" That seems like a weird question. How old art thou? Except if you consider the fact people died very young in this day and time. Even at this, by this point, we kind of lost those patriarchal days of 900 years and 100 years. That it had gotten to much, much less years by this point. People did not tend to live for very long periods of time, way back in this particular era. And so he looks at Jacob and he's amazed by the age that Jacob has reached. And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers, and the days of their pilgrimage." Jacob does something we've never seen Jacob do before. Pharaoh asks him, "How old are you?" He's amazed by the age of this man in front of him. And Jacob looks at him and he says, "I'm 130 years old. And few and evil have those days been. And I am nowhere near the man that my fathers were before me." But he uses a word in this sentence that's very important. He says, "my pilgrimage." Meaning that Jacob is taking the time to tell Pharaoh about God and the relationship that men have with God. He is telling Pharaoh that this life is but a passing time, that he is headed to a better place. Essentially, Jacob not only walks in and blesses one of Egypt's gods and does not get in trouble for it, but he uses the curiosity of Pharaoh to share a very simple message of the gospel, that he is going to a better place than this one, and that he is a sinner, that he's not lived his life the way that he should have lived his life, and that he hopes that his life is better on down the road. And then he again blesses Pharaoh and goes out from Pharaoh. I want you to think about this for a moment. They didn't just have to trust in God spiritually. They didn't just have to trust God secularly. They had to trust God enough to carry this through. And all it took for Jacob was seeing God bless them with that land that he was willing to go above and beyond trusting God to just dwell in the land, but trusting God enough that for the first time, probably in all of Jacob's existence, he takes the time to essentially witness about the God that he serves. Like the Jacob that we get here at 130 years old is the best Jacob we have yet to see in the scriptures. But what did it take? It took trusting in God. Not just trusting God, knowing that it was biblically okay. Not just trusting in God that secularly there's a good chance it might work out, even if it's difficult. But trusting God enough to actually go through with it. There are many of God's children that we all trust the scriptures. We all believe what the Bible says. We all logically can recognize the right things to do. But what we often lack is the trust to actually do them. One of the things that that you learn as you're going through life and you get married and you have children and you have a house is that all too often you might want to learn how to do some things yourself, right? But I have a rule. I have a rule for when I'm doing things myself. There's old DIY projects around the house. Is that I know my limitations. And when the biggest place that this rule comes into practice is with anything mechanically engineered, such as cars and lawnmowers. I know enough to be dangerous, but I know my limitations. Meaning that I have enough trust in my abilities to do oil changes and tire rotations, maybe even a brake job. But I know that if I were to try to follow through and change out a water pump on a new vehicle, that would not go well. Essentially, this is what's going on here with Jacob, is that Jacob understood that his limit was what God would allow him to do, which means he could do anything for God if he just followed through. And he uses that opportunity to witness to Pharaoh, to tell Pharaoh about right and wrong, and about how this life is temporary and that there's another life waiting for us. And not just to do that, but to even bless him in the name of his God, while who sits before him is believed to be a God. It says, and Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, and the best of the land in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore. So the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the corn which they brought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For the money faileth. And Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for the flocks and for the cattle of the herds and for the asses, and he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. And when that year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said unto him, we will not hide it from my lord how that our money is spent. My lord also hath our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh. And give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof. Only the land of the priests bought he not. For the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore they sold not their lands. Then Joseph said unto the people, Behold, I have bought you this day in your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and ye shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the increase that ye shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and for food for your little ones. And they said, Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day. The Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's. And Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen. And they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die. And he called his son Joseph, and said unto him, If now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt, but I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt, and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do as thou hast said. And he said, Swear unto me. And he sware unto him, and Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head. So, we trust in God spiritually, we trust in God logically, but we must trust in God to follow through. And in that follow through, essentially what happens is everybody lives happily ever after there for a while. The Israelites get the land of Goshen. They live in the land of Ramses, which is a beautiful area. That's a very nice area. For even to this day, it's a very beautiful area. And even as that's going on, the people of Egypt are blessed by the presence of Joseph and the things that he knows to do, because the latter half of the famine is horrible. And it's so horrible that they give up all their cattle and in exchange for food. The next year, they give up their land in exchange for food and their service. And what essentially ends up happening is, even though that Pharaoh owns the land, they only have to give a 20% tax, and for the rest of their lives, they're taken care of. They get to keep four-fifths of everything that they work to sell and to make money and to feed their families, and the 20% of it goes back to Pharaoh, and essentially saves the Egyptian economy that Joseph is there. So the Israelites are blessed because we followed through with God's plan. The Egyptians are blessed because Joseph follows through with God's plan. And here at the end, we get kind of a funny moment, because Jacob's worried he's going to die and not be buried in Canaan and be left in Egypt. And it's kind of a funny thing, because he thinks he's going to die, and then he lives for like another 15, 20 years from this particular moment. But he comes in, and he tells Joseph, make me a promise that you won't leave me here when I die, and that you'll take me back home, meaning that Jacob learned from trusting in God spiritually, from trusting in God logically, from trusting in God enough to follow through, that God was going to follow through on his promise that one day they would return back to their home. And he wanted to make sure that even though he might be dead before that time came, that he got to be there when that time came one way or another. And there is no greater picture in all of Jacob's life of him trusting God this strongly until this moment. Meaning that when you and I give God a chance and watch him work, it makes it easier to trust him the next time a big decision comes. And so, that is Genesis chapter 46 and 47. Make sure, as you're going about your week this week, that you take the time to learn to trust what the Word of God says and actually rely on it and apply it to your life. Learn to start trusting God, even when it seems like logically it might not be a good idea, even though it might not look like the best idea, even though you might think it's going to be very hard, or you even might even know that it's going to be hard, it's going to be intimidating, it's going to be scary, that you still do it anyway. Because, friend, when you trust God enough to follow through, the next time you're called to trust on God, it's easier than it was the time before. And then you can build and build and build on that. And then hopefully, maybe one day, we'll all be servants of God, that we make the right decision a whole lot more than we make the wrong one, because we were more worried about fear than we were about just trusting God. And so that is that chapter. I hope that everyone has an excellent week. Take the time to go back over and look at these chapters. Definitely go take some time to look at the genealogies of the sons of Jacob and his family, because you're going to, a lot of those names become important as you get further and further into the Old Testament and your own personal studies. But I hope that everyone has an excellent week. Obviously, take some time, study your Bible this week. If you've got questions, send them to us. We definitely would appreciate not only getting to help you out, but being able to possibly help some other people out that might have your questions. And if we don't have any, I've got a whole list of ones from times in the past that come up on a regular basis that we're going to go through, tough questions, questions that are relevant to cultural issues of this time, such as abortion and homosexuality, dealing with the questions of drugs and alcohol and what we're supposed to do with those things in this day and time. All kinds of just very interesting problems that are starting to present themselves in the lives of God's people. And so with all that said,